All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Thursday, August 25th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Nice. Nice for the timing. We even talked about the timing beforehand, and you still blew it. That is how you open a podcast. We're not the best in the business for nothing, folks. This is how you open a podcast. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Want to help you get started or get better at DFS, in this case MLB. We also have NFL going up on the site. You head over, you read the free content we have going up there every single day. And you also grab a free, now, two-week trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. You go to dailyfantasysportsrankings.com/playerlab, and that will get you a free two-week trial that's going to take you all the way up to NFL. And our NFL packages are rolled together with MLB. So if you get a subscription, it's for all sports. I know some sites like to section it off sport by sport. We don't do that. If we offer it as a premium subscription, it's all under one blanket. Free for 2 weeks, $29.95 a month after that, and you're all set to go calculating optimal lineups for MLB and NFL. Bam, nailed it. James.
Yeah, you crushed that.
I really did crush that. We have a shorter Thursday slate of games where there's a two-game slate at 1 o'clock, and does it interest you at all to, you know, we had some people in the chat room asking if this was a two-game slate that's, quote, worth it or not. Is that two games, the Detroit-Minnesota, Boston-Tampa Bay, quote, worth it for you to get in, you know, considering baseball's already high variance, and then you add in that there's only two games, can you get excited about that at all?
Yeah, it butts up against worth it for me. You know, generally on a two-game slate, what we want is a guy like a head and shoulders above the rest guy at pitcher and, you know, one or two stackable lineups, and we have that. You know, you can play Pomerantz against Tampa Bay. He's a very high points per dollar guy in our system. You know, in the theoretical all-day slate, he would be, you know, a top consideration. And then the Detroit-Minnesota game has an over-under of 10, and that's high. You know, that's a high total. Two pitchers that don't scare you in Berrios and Norris. So I could definitely see doing something like stack Detroit and Minnesota, you know, cherry pick a value guy or two from Boston and play Pomerantz. There you go. We could do a 10-second podcast every day.
You crushed it. I don't think that we could probably just log off now. You know, I can do the
head over and make your money and then come back for the late slate when the time comes.
No, I think I'm totally with you. Pomerantz is one of those guys. I wasn't excited necessarily about the trade at the time because I thought he was just overrated coming out of San Diego. But all things are relative in this case. He gets a great park. Rays strike out a ton, so and he's the clear money line favorite on the early slate. Although it's not,
sure,
he's not like
you can be overrated and still be good too.
So. Oh yeah, yeah, totally. That's why I was trying to make the distinction of he's just not like an ace what he might have looked like coming out of Petco, but he's still fine. And Tampa Bay just K's a lot, so yeah, I think
Petco East, yeah,
yeah. Actually, it might even be better than Petco at this point in terms of park factor. So the I think I'm with you. I think we can. That's pretty much the long and short of that slate. I don't think we need to go too much into the rest of it. Okay, the evening slate of games starting at 7 o'clock. We have Scherzer going. I'm just going to start off with him. Is he like just the clear cash game play here, or is there somewhere else to maybe fade or pivot off of Scherzer here?
Nope, he's the clear guy for me. I mean, definitely. Well, for two reasons. Obviously, he's just the best pitcher going. I think you can also kind of get some, maybe a little separation from the once bitten and twice shy crowd that won't, you know, will willfully ignore that two games ago was Colorado, his one truly bad start, and then his start against Atlanta, which definitely, you know, obviously we played him. It was a great spot and didn't work out, but there's no red flags here for me or anything. It's just a guy who's hitting one of those midseason road bumps, and no reason to believe that will continue tonight. So yeah, I'm in on Scherzer for sure.
It's so funny with guys like Scherzer, and it's really, I think it stands to reason that it's like this. Well, if you're a DFS, you know, person or accolade or whatever, that where
DFS person, DFS the most boring superhero of all time.
the good pitchers are spotlighted more, obviously, because they're good, right? And so people tend to
bad, it's more noteworthy.
Yeah. What's that?
And when they're bad, it's more noteworthy.
Right, like no one ever complains like, oh, James Shields screwed me again, you know? Of course he did, he stinks, right? So like no one throws out those complaints, but they will complain about a guy like Scherzer or Fernandez or really just all of the top line pitchers because they are spotlighted on a given night because of the best, and then they are therefore more heavily rostered than most other bad pitchers. And then their bad games are brought to the forefront, and then one thinks, well, X pitcher, X ace pitcher screwed me, and so now I don't want to roster X ace pitcher again because of that. So, and I, you kind of touched on it a second ago when you say, you know, Scherzer's last two games have been struggles, and that is going to sit in people's minds, and they're going to look at that game log and think that something's wrong with him or whatever. This guy's elite. I love when people talk themselves out of this kind of play, which, and it happens a ton. And this will just, it'll be no different tonight. His ownership percentage will be way lower than it should be considered. And it's just a great spot to get him in on cash games.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy that I'm looking at for cash games is Robbie Ray. He's an interesting commodity at this point because while his, you know, you can't complain about what he's actually done when he takes the mound, at least not in the last couple months, frankly. Like, he's had good start after good start. Great matchup against the Braves today, second lowest WOBA against left-handed pitching this season, and a reasonable strikeout rate as well. The dings on Ray tonight, though, are the park, obviously. Arizona continues to be a very, very tough home park. And an underrated thing with Ray that I think a lot of people just don't take into consideration just because the strikeout numbers have been so electric this season is just the batting lineup that supports him. You know, while run support, when you're comparing two guys on the same team, is essentially random. Like, you wouldn't say, yeah, the Cubs just show up for Lester and they don't for Arrieta. You know, like, that kind of stuff is generally nonsense. But the fact is that Arizona just loses all the time. <It's> like right. One of the things they do best is just lose. Second most losses in the major leagues, or in the National League anyway, that I'm looking at here. So there's pros and cons with Ray. Ray, obviously, huge, huge upside in this game. Terrific GPP candidate. And frankly, might wind up being the cash game chalk play when everything comes out in the wash. But definitely a guy you're going to want to take a look at.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks are one of those teams that just struggle with understanding basic baseball concepts, like about lineup construction and how to hit, just how to make your lineup. Like, they'll just
do... Who good players are to get on your team in the first place.
Right, well, then they even get guys that are good and then just don't even know what to do with them. Like, so they get Jake Lamb, who's decent, and they're like, you know what, dude, hit seventh against the righty, while we stick guys like Yasmani Tomas and Wellington Castillo above you, who are, like, almost below replacement level when it comes to hitting righties. And so they just, like, roll a train of righty bats down the middle of the lineup that can't hit righties, and then they stick, like, just, like, basic little things like that. Like, stick a guy like Bourne, who has a sub-300 on-base percentage, second in front of Goldschmidt, who's an elite talent. So those things add up over the course of a season for a team, and it's really added up for the Diamondbacks. Like, they wouldn't be good. Like, I mean, how many wins does it matter to maybe have a quick lineup switch? A couple?
Yeah, not the 21 that they're under 500.
No. Right. Hitting Jake Lamb second wouldn't have them in the playoffs for sure. But, like...
Yeah, but there are guys like Bourne. I mean, like, having him simply on the team is arguably...
Right.
That's probably worth 3 wins a season or something. Like, he's just lousy, you know?
And like I said, just like not understanding just basic platoon splits. It's just, anyway, so this doesn't have so much to do with Ray, but you're right. And the other thing too, that's a little funny, is that as of 9:30 right now, there's no opening line in that game.
You took the words out of my mouth, Doug.
Oh my gosh.
You leave those words in my mouth.
I apologize, dude. I don't like taking things from anybody. I'm pretty in terms of just personal freedoms. I don't like
anything. Do as you say, not as you do, I guess.
So there's no, why do you think there's no line in this game?
I don't know.
He's not the best in the business for nothing.
So there's my fast answer.
Yeah, I actually don't have an answer.
Are there big guys that we're missing that, you know, are doubtful for tonight?
Nah, that wouldn't affect having nothing on it. Like, I don't, like, even if a guy was doubtful, like, let's say, like, Goldschmidt was doubtful, they would still have something, I think, up there. I'm a little confused as to why there's nothing. It could could point to they're not sure about the overall pitching. I'm not sure. So anyway, it's a long
twist. You know what it is? It's that they just recalled Whistler yesterday.
Maybe.
So I think that it's just that they recalled Whistler yesterday, and then this was late too. They called him up at 8:30 last night.
Mm-hmm.
So it could just be that the books haven't, you know, the lines haven't made their way to the internet yet, would be my guess. But
my guess is something like Diamondbacks -150, like 8.5 over. That would be if I were just to set it off what I think it's going to be.
Are we guessing the lines now? Loser gets to hit the other with a Subway sandwich?
We don't want to promote our other podcast. The one other line that's interesting today, and I wonder what you think about it, is the Blue Jays come in at they open at -242 and have gone up to -255 in Toronto. That's Hap against Weaver. So obviously the Weaver piece doesn't affect the Angels implied run line, but they're coming in right around 3.55 implied runs for Hap. Is Hap a guy that you can consider at all on either in a vacuum, just on raw points, or I mean he's 11,000 on DraftKings and he is, let me read real quick, he's 9,800 on FanDuel. Is this a guy that excites you even at all? I mean, that's a huge money line.
It's a huge money line. Excites would be a strong word here. I mean, part of this could be that Hap is just generally not an exciting pitcher. Mm-hmm. I mean, really the only fundamental thing that's changed about him from last year to this year is he's just run hotter on batting average on balls in play.
Bing.
So
yep.
the flat 4.00 xFIP, he's like the definition of just a guy. I guess if you're sorting for win safety, you know, Hap appears to be arguably the safest starting pitcher going today that's going to get a win, but you know, you can't count on that either. And the Angels do have some high upside bats that could ding into Hap a little bit early on and take away some of that win upside as well. So I'm not impressed. I don't know. What, how about you?
He's priced this way because he has 11 wins in his last 12 games, which is just the definition of unsustainable no matter who you are. There's just so much needs to go right for you to be able to just maintain anything like those win things, although guys like Porcello are also challenging the concept behind win safety. But in general, it just doesn't make sense. This guy's just not a lock for a win. So he's been...
No, he's not. And the Angels, by the way, fewest strikeouts in the league against left-handed pitching this year too. So it's not even like there's tremendous upside here.
I think this line is influenced. I think sometimes where, we talk about where Vegas lines help us or hurt us. This seems to be a situation where it's probably overweighting how good people think Hap is, right? So his ERA is 3, which looks good on paper, but as you said, nothing else about his numbers are really any different than just the slightly above average pitcher he was last season. He's fine. He's a major league. He'll take him on your team for sure. But he's run hot with BABIP and he's run hot with wins. And I don't know. I could see people talking themselves into him on that case. And I'm with you. I'd rather roster Scherzer for just 10% more, I think. Any other pitchers, let's say on DraftKings, if we need to go starting pitcher 2, because Hap and Ray and Scherzer are all pretty expensive, where you're going to commit, 23K in salary if you were to roster any of those together, somewhere in that 21 to 23K range. Is there a pitcher on the cheaper end that we can get away with where I can just fit a few more bats in because I don't need to spend all my salary at the starting pitcher slot?
Well, Adam Wainwright from the St. Louis Cardinals. Been more like Adam Wayne Wrong recently.
Is that your Steve Summers impersonation?
Yeah, have you laughed?
I wonder how many of our listeners will get that. That's a New York WFAN.
Oh, I was going to say they could email me and try to guess where he's from, but that's all right.
My bad.
But Wainwright's been a tough guy. Actually, well, we're playing DFS in New York again, right? So maybe we got some New Yorkers. Where my New York is at? That's not a good New York.
That was awesome. That was really good. We should have guessed the accent on that one. You shouldn't have said it.
Good stuff. Yeah, so Wainwright has sucked recently. He was truly abysmal against Chicago 2 starts ago. with his negative 11.5 fantasy points on DraftKings. That's not good. Wasn't like particularly terrific against Philadelphia either, and that's a little more concerning, obviously, because Philly stinks. But again, what do you think has really fundamentally changed about the guy from a month ago? Now maybe he's dealing with some stuff. He is old. It's getting towards the end of the season, and maybe he's losing some of that extra gas in the tank or whatever. But the pitch counts are still pretty reasonable. It's another good matchup today against the what's left of the Mets. And, we don't need too much from our starting pitcher 2 slot at a $6,900 price tag. So he's definitely a guy I'm looking at in the value department. If you want to go deep punts, I mentioned Matt Whistler. He's just a straight 4,000. That's a GPP play. He can't be considered safe necessarily. But a $4,000 pitcher is always going to be noteworthy just because you don't have to do anything at all really to justify a price like that. So... I imagine his projection will come down though once the line comes in. So yeah, not a ton in the way of great value plays for me. Like the good pitchers, there's a huge gap, by the way. It goes from 9,700 for James Paxton to 7,100 at Tom Kohler. So
yeah, this might be the time where you just need to probably spend up a little bit for raw points, even if it's somewhat less than quote optimal. Because the guys like Wainwright just have question marks to them. And I don't know, the Mets are getting a little healthier now. They have Bruce there. They have Granderson at back at the top of the lineup. They will switch hit a couple guys in the middle of the lineup, so you can't really play a righty-lefty matchup against them. Wainwright is very scary. I could see him being just okay-ish. It's hard for me to imagine he totally crushes his price just because of, like you said, it's just not a lot of what is happening for him peripheral-wise and just getting knocked around could be just not, and it might not be an anomaly. He might just be getting old and bad. So
The issue is, though, I mean, today with a lot of pretty decent spots to spend up, like you mentioned the Blue Jays earlier, the going from Scherzer and Wainwright to Scherzer and Ray, at least in our system, is a 6-point swing, which is, I mean, tremendous. Like, we would never recommend generally that you go in that direction, but I could see as like more lines shake out throughout the rest of the day, that kind of, you know, those two totals converging on one another. But right now, I'm just feeling nervous mostly that it's going to be hard to find as much safety as you want across the whole lineup.
Yeah, I'm with you. The starting pitcher two thing is, I don't know, it's hit or miss for me, and this one seems like a miss, and which could mean just avoiding DK in general, depending on, I don't know, how things shake out. Let's move into the bats side of things. Whenever there's a lack of starting pitchers to sort of consider, it stands to reason that there are plenty of bats to consider for all the inverse reasons or whatever. So where are we starting in terms of team totals, in terms of teams to look at? Is there a particular, you know, squad that stands out to you in terms of that we can look to stack today?
Yeah, the Blue Jays are the big leader in the clubhouse right now. Jared Weaver's been tremendously awful all season and just continues to get starts in the majors for reasons I can't fully explain. The Blue Jays actually have a number. I mean, while they don't stack a lot of left-handed bats, it just doesn't matter against a pitcher of Weaver's caliber. So I am definitely all over them today. As for, and I, by the way, I think most people will be all over them, so not breaking any new ground there. Another team I like quite a bit are the Nationals. You know, some people might look at that game and see the low overall total at 8.5 and be a little bit dissuaded. But keep in mind that, you know, Baltimore has to face Scherzer, so their line is going to be depressed by that. And Ubaldo Jimenez, with his 6.94 ERA this season, that means literally every 9 innings he pitches, he gives up 7 runs.
Is that bad? That's
pretty bad. I mean, that's, you know, like a little league ERA basically. So it's the usual suspects in Washington as well. Harper will show up again today almost without a doubt. And you can also splash a little Daniel Murphy maybe at second base and even go, you know, if you want to go deep dive on the Washington stack, maybe you slide in Wilson Ramos or, you know, any of the other guys that happen to bat around Harper and Murphy. So those are the two top ones for me today. Are you looking at any other teams in terms of, you know, really targeting them on stacks?
I think that's where it's going to probably end up coming in. I mean, for reasons I'm not totally sure, Harper's price continues to drop on FanDuel. So he was 4,000 yesterday, 3,900 today. He's just been, for all the people that want to ring in and say he's been bad, it's just not true. So over the last, someone commented yesterday in our chat was talking about, you know, Harper, again, the old Harper stinks train, which I'll never understand. Over the last 10 days, he's had, I think, the most average points for any batter. I think the only guy I could find that was higher was Chris Bryant. So he's just been back to his old elite self, and there's just no reason to get away from him. That 3,900 price is really a must play, I think, on FanDuel at least. Those Toronto bats are all in a great spot. I'm with you. I don't understand how Jared Weaver continues to have a major league job. He throws like an 82-mile-an-hour fastball. So I'm not making that number up, too. That like actually is what the number is, I think. So he's just
faster than you can throw.
That is true. I would probably strike out against Jared Weaver, but not many major leaguers do. After those two guys, I like Seattle's spot here.
I was going to bring up Seattle.
Sure you were.
Sneakier snack today.
You don't need to like have the team that I say and then pretend like you were going to talk about them. It just doesn't become you to be that kind of guy. But they come in, they move, huge park upgrade for them, moving from Seattle to U.S. Cellular.
Chicago. Yeah, I was going to say that.
To U.S. Cellular. They're a team that will throw at least four out of their first five batters will be
left-handed.
Come on. I'm about to stop the podcast. I'm about to stop the podcast in a second. Just have a talk with you off air about protocol. The only thing that concerns me a little bit with Seattle, and we've seen this happen with them regarding a couple of their guys, is that they will – they're one of the teams that really does understand lefty-righty platoons, but they understand it so well that late game it can hurt you fantasy-wise. So they if Chicago brings a lefty from the pen, they will pinch hit for guys like Seth Smith or Adam Lind. And so that is the only thing that worries me a little bit on Seattle. So – if you know, we base a lot of things on projected plate appearances based on batting lineup, but we don't necessarily factor in the likelihood of you getting, like, so for instance, guys like, you know, Murphy and Harper in the middle of the Nationals order will never get swapped out for and pinch hit for. Yep. But guys like Smith and Lynn will. What do you think when you see situations like that crop up?
Yeah, it's interesting because now that the sites don't penalize you for outs, basically you just want guys going up there no matter how bad their platoon splits are and at least just closing their eyes and swinging the bat.
Right.
So definitely worth noting there. At that point, you're going to want to take a deeper dive into bullpens and figure out, you know, how often does this team actually bring in lefties and so on. To be honest, I haven't done that deep a dive on this slate, and nor do I generally speaking, just because it's so hit or miss. But I think it's just, you know, at least on our side, it's going to be part of their overall statistical profile, projecting their at-bats and whatnot. So I don't look at it too much beyond what the database churns out. I will note that Anthony Renuado has just a comically bad set of peripherals this season. I mean, 4.4 Ks per nine and 8.16 walks per nine. Like, I've never even seen anything like that. Granted, it's only 14 innings, but...
That's a lot of innings, though. That's not an insignificant...
It doesn't get worse than that.
Right, yeah. 14 innings is not... I mean, it's not a huge sample size, but... It's not insignificant, though, if you're walking that many players.
Well, you're walking that many players, and the 4.4 K rate, given that you're facing just an extra batter every single inning because you walk a guy every inning, means that he's just not doing anything well. Like, just couldn't be worse. And he, of crazy note with Renuado, too. See, the 9.42 ERA, not what you like to see, but his BABIP is just 1.163.
He's been lucky.
That could double. If it doubles, he might never make it through an inning. So, again, you can't count on this. Like, he's been something better than that in the past, but not really. I mean, he was a huge prospect. People remember drafted by the Red Sox, you know, to a lot of fanfare. I'm actually not looking at this, so don't make fun of me. But I think he was out of LSU. But I remember he was a really, really highly touted arm.
I can tell when you, like, go to Wikipedia and read something off as part
I usually do that as a joke. Here I'm actually remembering it, okay? So.
No, I know. I'm giving you props. I know that you and I have spared 10,000 hours worth of conversations, and I know the tenor of where you're going, and I knew that was the true thing, and I wasn't going to say anything about it.
Good job by me. I like to picture sometimes, you know, at the pearly gates of heaven, that one of the things they also do is just show you a big list of exactly how much time you've spent doing everything. So if I make it to age 60, it'll be like, yeah, you spent 20 years sleeping, you know, you spent whatever years, you know, doing the dishes. And then it's going to say something like, and you spent 7 years of your whole life talking to this Doug Norrie person?
Like, why? I like how you just...
Could you spend that time a little bit better?
I like how you just pencils yourself in for heaven, which I'm not sure what...
talking more like limbo area where you get there and they... this is like where they go and now you're just... It's kind of like going to a parole hearing or like the dentist.
Sure,
you know,
that
where
makes
it's
more
like,
sense.
They come in and they're like, well, here are your x-rays. And you're like... Can you just tell me if I have it?
Right. The staging area for you makes more sense, I think, than just the overall, just walking in through the gates. All right. So I think we're on the same page here. Blue Jays.
Love Seattle, and people might not be as on them as some other teams. So.
And their prices, they're one of those teams too, where because they just play in a power depressed park all the time, the salaries stay lower across the board just in general. Yeah. So it's just one of those perfect situations.
Their park is bad enough that it depresses prices due to performance, but not so bad that the sites artificially account for it, like they do in Coors in the other direction, right? So,
actually think they only do that for Coors. I don't think that obviously I would love to just get a look at some of these algorithms, but for sure they do it for Coors, but I don't think they do it nearly, if at all, for any of the other parks. And it's not... These other parts, it does matter, right? Cincinnati and Chicago and Arizona.
Texas.
Yeah, these places are great power parks. And the sites are only, they're really only correcting for Coors because of the public perception on it. I mean, it's correct, but they should be doing it for all the parks. And I just don't think that they are. And this is one of those situations where they're, a team like Mariners are in a good spot. Any other sort of one-off kind of guys that you see cropping up in the optimal lineups? I mean, it's 9:45 now, so things change. But any other guys from the teams that we did not mention, Washington, Toronto, Seattle, that show up as, you know, price plays that look like they're in good spots?
Sure. So I think you can look at whoever winds up leading off for St. Louis. That's been a routine source of value. So if that's Garcia or Pham today, either of those guys will be a good filler guy to fit in more expensive guys around your lineup. Tim Anderson, the same way at shortstop, you know, if he's going to get in the leadoff or up towards the top of the lineup spot, he's going to be a good value at a very, very cheap price. And a team we didn't mention actually was Texas. I think there are a number of guys you can take in a game against Josh Tomlin, who, you know, Tomlin's had kind of an up and down past, but one thing he does do is throw strikes and not strike out a lot of guys. So, you know, both if you're kind of hunting around for upside, or if you just want to have a one-off kind of safe-ish guy like Beltre or Jerks and Profar or one of, you know, the better Texas bats, all those guys are definitely in consideration for me tonight.
Yeah, Anderson had something like a 20% price drop over from day over day. He was 2,900 yesterday, 2,300. Actually, that's 30%. 2,300 today. So he's a guy that I could definitely, even against Paxton, I love that spot for him. At a shortstop position, that's actually, it's not too bad considering you have Tulo there. I don't mind even paying up for Turner. Turner guy, he's, Jimenez is so bad. I don't love Turner's profile as a leadoff hitter, but he has the total green light once he gets on base. So they'll just send him every single time he hits first. And he's just one of those guys where you can really knock it out of the park in terms of
Turner you're talking about.
Trey Turner, yeah. Terms of stolen base upside. I don't mind. I could say, just as a little contrarian stack, I wouldn't mind at maybe throwing in the Indians against Hamels. I know Hamels has been good. This is way off the board, by the way. I wouldn't recommend this for cash games. But the Indians get... they moved to Texas, like we said, about just in terms of park upgrade. And this is just strictly for a tournament. If you wanted to throw the top of their righties into a tournament and hope they can get the Hamels early, they will throw Davis up there, Lindor up there, Napoli. And those guys all have better platoon splits against lefties. Strictly a tournament play. I wouldn't suggest it for cash games.
Yeah, I was going to say, just because, I mean, Hamels has been about as consistent as you can get in terms of being good in the last almost 2 months. So I'm not going to be all over that one, but I can see a case where, you know, you're just trying to stack a team that no one else is going to play. That would be a case for sure.
The other team that falls into that category for me here is the Pirates moving to Milwaukee. So they have a close to 5 implied runs. They're a team where they get Willie Peralta. Willie Peralta is not in that Jared Weaver class of totally sucks, but he's pretty bad. And the Pirates, this is where I'm hoping they do something like bat Matt Joyce second again against the righty, which would be, you know, 2,200 on FanDuel. That would be just a boon to have him. He'd be an every lineup guy if he could get into that spot. But even guys like Polanco, Josh Harrison is fine against righties. So that's park upgrade, implied running upgrade for the Pirates. Peralta's bad. There's just a lot of ways to go on this slate. Just a lot of teams facing, like we said at the beginning, when there's not a lot of pitchers to talk about, well, there's going to be a lot of hitters to talk about.
It's a relative smorgasbord, Doug.
What's that mean?
I like it quite a bit. Do you think, so one thing that I like to keep in mind on days like today, where it seems like there are so many great options to choose from, on a hitter's perspective, is playing multiple slates. So it's the type of slate where you can play a turbo or an express slate, you know, bundle 3 games together or a 5 game late-ish slate or even a 2 game late slate in some cases, although possibly not today, where you can get value across multiple slates, kind of lower your exposure to any singular guy. Like maybe if you're like, well, tonight's there's a lot of value, but I don't want to play Harper and, you know, 5x my normal buy-in. Well, spreading across multiple slates will allow you the chance to reap maximum value without maximum exposure. So
yeah, that's a fantastic point. And I think one place where people get in trouble is when on the slate like tonight, they look down their lineup and they say, well, how can I not have so-and-so, right? And how could I not have this guy? How can I not have this guy? And you can really get yourself in trouble because you start making all these lineups because you want to fill this need of having...
Like, I don't have any Seattle stacks. Oh.
Exactly. Having a little piece of everybody because so many guys look good. And that is just... Eventually, at some point, that's just incorrect, right? Like you just can't... If you try to play everybody, you end up playing nobody. So I love the idea where you get an 8 o'clock slate that has a couple of those teams we mentioned, the Seattle, Texas, Chicago kind of stacks. But then this is where I also wish that the sites would do early only, like 7 o'clock only. And at times they've done it, and then they sort of got away from it. They've I know FanDuel, I think, experimented with it for a time. They experimented with the AL-NL, which was, that went away pretty quickly because people, no one was playing it because it's kind of just impossible to filter for that kind of thing, but or filter for it in a timely manner. The but this is where I just wish that they would just do these 7 o'clock only slates, because that would be the perfect opportunity to just spread your buy-ins equally, because what ends up happening is the main slate ends up becoming that early only, and that's your only time to get in
and
value.
Who wants no early only slate? Who looks at that and is like, damn it, with these early only slates, you know, like I don't, especially in baseball where things can change so dramatically leading right up to lock. It seems like a no brainer to cluster slates that way, but
yeah,
alas,
not,
this is the world we live in.
Yeah. Maybe we'll FanDuel can, I'll give my cell phone number. I'll put my cell phone number in the show notes and FanDuel can call me for all my suggestions. I think that's pretty much it for us today. Like we said, Scherzer comes to the top of the heap in terms of pitching. Be a little wary of that starting pitcher two slot on DraftKings, where no one, either it's a price thing or just a peripherals and matchup thing, where it just doesn't strike me as totally safe going in that direction. And then just a ton of different stacks that you can really sink your teeth into. Where
sure. Keep an eye on that Robbie Ray line as that comes out later today, you know. Because that could wind up really. Oh, we do have a line on the Robbie Ray game. It just came out.
What is
yeah,
it?
So it's 9.5 Diamondbacks favored by -160.
Ooh,
so.
I was close on the line, off on the over under. So I was a run off on the over under, but decent with the money line. I'll get better. I'm working on it, buddy. It's all a process. That is it for us today. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to the site, grab a free now 2-week trial of our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, where you will get Major League Baseball optimal lineups, and it will take you all the way up through football season 2 weeks from now, that you can mess around. You go in, calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, and also take a look at our new, brand new Player Lab, which is about as good a tool as you'll see in the industry for filtering out and game selection, tournament stacks, noticing trends, really everything you're going to need to really crush it in football this season. Free for 2 weeks, $29.95 a month after that. Hey, buddy, we're off to do a football podcast, so we'll see you over there.
I can't wait, buddy. I'll talk to you in 1 minute.
Bye.